CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
I'm Kim Grinnell of Dogman.com with Scott Eklund. 247 final rankings for the 2020 recruiting class was released today. Want to go over it with you. Risers, fallers, guys that didn't make it. KJ Costello rumored to be on campus. And always seems to be a lot going on. We get these little lulls in recruiting, and then all of a sudden it heats up again. A lot of several walk-on commits over the past few days. And second signing day just around the corner. Scott Eklund taking a look at what's going on out there. Definitely some risers and fallers. Let's start off with Sam Adams out of Eastside Catholic in Sammamish, Washington. We have him projected as a running back. It looks like that's what he's going to play. He was over in the Polynesian Bowl, was not able to participate, went through some shoulder surgery, but talk a little bit about Sam Adams, and he had a pretty significant drop.
Yeah, he dropped 133 spots. So almost fell out of the top 247, wound up at 246th out of 247. So still a four-star, still a talented kid. This doesn't diminish his abilities at the next level or anything like that. But what people need to take in mind is that 247, when they go through and do their rankings, they're ranking kids based on their potential to be NFL players. And this doesn't mean that Sam Adams can't be a really good NFL player eventually at some point. But I think what they just see is they see a guy who is most everybody thought was going to be better as a defensive guy, but he wants to play offense, and that's what he's being recruited to play. And so when you look at that, he's going to end up at running back. Do they really think that he's going to be able to maximize his talent at the running back spot? He's about 6 feet tall. He's, 195, 200 pounds, somewhere in that range. I don't know it off the top of my head, his height and weight. And, and I think he could easily get up in the 215, 220 range and be a good receiver out of the backfield, be a pretty good downhill runner for the Huskies. But, he didn't wow people at camps, and he wasn't super productive on a state championship team. Ball carrying duties in the backfield with Gio Ursino, who's another really good tailback over there. And played both ways, but struggled with some shoulder stuff. So I just think that's why we saw the drop that we saw.
And when you take a look at his film, I don't think he popped like you would like to see, but pretty sure that most of that is going to be because he was playing hurt. So
I think some of it's that. Yeah.
Yeah. He had the surgery. He didn't participate in the Polynesian Bowl. So hopefully he's fully recovered by the time he gets to Washington. And I'm guessing with the off-season surgery, he's going to be a prime candidate for a red shirt coming up this following year. So even though he dropped, I think the future is still bright for Sam Adams, Scott.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's got all the ability to come in and be a really good player. Maybe not that guy who can carry the rock 20, 25 times per game. He's coming into this class with another really good tailback who's very similar to him in JB on Sunday, who put up huge numbers as the main ball carrier on a team that went to the state championship game in Texas. Now, granted, it was a 4A team, which would be the equivalent of like a 2A team up here, but still really good running back. And so those guys are going to battle it out. Plus, he's got a couple other guys. So is his immediate impact going to be felt right away? I don't think so. I think you're looking at a guy whose impact will be felt 2 or 3 years from now.
Jacoby Covington, he's a cornerback out of Saguaro High School, and a lot of people excited about Jacoby Covington. I know the coaches are, but took a little bit of a drop. And sometimes, Scott, maybe we just need to clarify, sometimes guys aren't really dropping, guys are jumping ahead of them.
Yeah, and you know what I always say to people is when they say, well, that's ridiculous, he should be ranked here. And I said, okay, so why would you drop the other player? Have you seen him play in person and seen all the stuff? I mean, it's just, it's so hard to judge because productivity can look great for one guy and look so-so for another guy, but the competition was really good for the guy that looked so-so, and it was kind of a lower level competition for the guy who put up huge numbers. So there's a lot of different things that go into the evaluation process, and that some of it's productivity, some of it's their athleticism, some of it's their upside, some of it's how they perform, some of it's off the field stuff. It's all these different things that they throw together and come up with a ranking. And so Jacoby Covington, you know, he's 6'1", 200 pounds is what we have him listed at. And he's a guy that played opposite Kelee Ringo, the number one cornerback in the country, who was ranked number 7 in the country at Saguaro High School. And, you know, Covington is a guy that I think a lot of people thought would move to safety. Well, safeties don't get prioritized in the rankings. It's more cornerbacks that get prioritized. So he's going to project to safety once he gets to the University of Washington. And I think that's why he might have fell just a little bit. It's only 10 spots, number 213 to number 223. But still a huge prize for Washington. They beat Oklahoma and several other big time schools for his services.
Garen Hatchett, the offensive lineman out of Ferndale, Jake Locker's hometown, Jake Locker's school. And Garen Hatchett had a little bit. Well, he didn't move a lot.
He didn't move at all.
He didn't move at all. Tell people about Garen Hatchett a little bit. He just seems like he's been around forever, Scott.
Well, yeah, we've been talking about him since he was a freshman in high school up there at Ferndale. He started as a freshman. He's played every game, I think, of his high school career. I could be wrong on that, but I think he's played every game of the last four seasons for Ferndale. And a really talented guy, can pull better than almost anybody I've ever seen, just a natural pulling guard. He's 6'5", he's 290 pounds, and really has great feet, can get to the second level pretty easily. His biggest struggle is going to be as a pass blocker. Up at Ferndale, they run that wing T, and they rarely throw the ball. I saw two of his games this year, and I think there were 3 passes thrown in those games. So, you know, they just don't throw the ball very much, and it's tough when you're not used. It's, you know, you don't have that muscle memory when you're trying to learn how to block against really talented kids. And so at camps, he really, really struggled in pass blocking. But and he even admitted that he did. And he's gotten to work on it. He's worked really, really hard to get better at it. And I think with some patience, he's going to be a really good player. The problem is the comparison is with Henry Roberts, who came from a wing T, who has the same physical size and athleticism that Garen Hatchett did. So a lot of people weren't thrilled with the kind of career that Henry Roberts had. He was a part-time starter and full-time backup at the University of Washington. And I think they're hoping for more from Garen Hatchett. I think he will get more. I think he's got a little bit more of that nasty side than Henry Roberts did. But a lot of it's going to be on how he picks up the pass protections, and that's going to take a little while.
Inside or outside guy?
Oh, he's definitely a guard. I don't see him playing tackle. He played guard in high school. You don't see a lot of guys playing guard in high school and then moving out to tackle. It happens, but it doesn't happen very often. So he will be probably a left guard because you usually pull from that side, and I think he's a guy who will end up at left guard at some point.
Is a chance he could be a center?
I don't want to say no because I'm sure they'll give him a shot there. I don't see him with that natural ability. I think he's going to be a guy who needs to play off and be a guard.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The one that a lot of people are scratching their head over, Miles Morrell, out of Mater Dei High School in Santa Ana, California. He dropped 31 spots from 153 to 122, and He just seems to tear everybody up, but what's the deal with Miles Morrell?
He actually did the opposite, Kim. He went from 122 to 153. But that's what I said.
He dropped.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll just go from that. Anyway, so the thing is, you watch Miles Morales' film. He's nasty. He plays left tackle for one of the best teams in the entire country, not just the state of California, but the entire country. I think they were ranked number one all season, all the way until that last week of the season when they lost to St. John Bosco, and I think they ended up either number three or number two in the country. So the guy's been dominant basically since he was a sophomore. Struggled with a lower leg injury. I think he had a broken tibia and he maybe even had a dislocated ankle. I'm not 100% sure on that. But at the end of his junior year in the playoffs, and so he played this season. I don't know if he was quite 100% when he played. I know when he showed up at the opening in July that he was only about 80% and he really held his own. I know that he just loves to compete. That's what this guy likes to do. Now, the reason why he dropped is because he's projected as an inside player, a guy, either guard or center, and he's actually being projected at center for the University of Washington. Well, the problem with that is the NFL draft does not prioritize interior guys. Usually they focus on tackles. And so that's going to hurt him in the overall rankings. He's still one of the best offensive linemen in the entire country. He had offers from every school you could think of in the top 25. We're talking Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, or maybe Clemson was the only one that he didn't have, but he had offers from pretty much all of the big time schools: Auburn, Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, Oklahoma. All those schools offered him, but he chose the University of Washington partly because of his relationship with Scott Huff. That was a big reason why. But he also really loved the Built for Life philosophy. And he also wanted to help Washington win a championship. And he said he thought it would be really cool to be a part of something like that. And I think that's why he ended up here.
Biggest riser is a kid who just had a phenomenal year. And I don't think anybody saw him having the type of year he did. But out of Corona Del Mar, out of Newport Beach, California, quarterback Ethan Garbers, completely out of the top 24/7, just skyrockets all the way to 151.
Yeah, and he was in the low 600, like the high 600s, like 680, 690, something like that. And he climbed all the way to 151. So I'd say he was the highest riser of Husky signees. Ends up, like you said, Kim, at 151 in the rankings. There's not a lot that's left to say about him. I mean, the guy threw for over 5,000 yards, 71 touchdowns, and just 5 interceptions. Led his team to a 16-0 record. They won the CIFD D1 state title. That was the reason why he just took his official visit, because they were making their playoff run when Washington would have hosted them for an official visit. So he ended up taking his time and coming up on his official visit just last weekend. Not quite as good an athlete as his brother. His brother can run around a little bit for Cal and everything like that, which Ethan can do. But he's more of that stand in the pocket, get the ball out of your hand, make good decisions, and throw an accurate pass. And he's coming in the spring, and I'm not saying he's going to win it, especially with us talking about – we're going to talk about the possibility of transfer coming in at the quarterback spot here. But I think he's got a chance to at least challenge for the backup spot once he gets here, and that'll be pretty interesting.
A guy who might be a little bit on the raw side, but player of the year in Vegas, a wide receiver out of Bishop Gorman, Rome Udunze.
Yeah. Comes out of Bishop Gorman, one of the top, private schools in the country as far as football is concerned. They've been all over the place. They've been in the national spotlight quite a bit. They play on national TV a lot. He put up 54 receptions for 1,222 yards and 15 touchdowns in just 13 games as a senior. They ended up losing to Troy Fa'utanu's old school, Liberty High School out of Henderson, and they ended up losing to them, I think, in the state semis. So a little weird for them. I think they're just used to running free all the way to a title, because the state of Nevada just doesn't have the same kind of talent that Bishop Gorman does. But anyway, he put up big numbers. He's big. He's fast. He's very productive. Like you said, Kim, kind of raw, so he's going to have to learn how to run routes a little bit better and things like that. But pretty much every high school wide receiver has to do that when they come into college. So Washington, he had a really good, from what I remember, he had a really good week of practice down at the Polynesian Bowl. And Washington's really excited to have him and Jalen Millen, who we'll talk about in a second, as their two big-time wide receivers. And they got Sawyer Racanelli coming in as well. So really good receiver class for the University of Washington.
Nice jump for Romu Dunze, who moved up 53 spots from 187 to 134. And just taking a look at his offers, he had offers from Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Miami, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, and Stanford. So a lot to like with Rome Udunze, and definitely a guy to keep an eye on. And another guy out of Colorado. They went a little bit outside the area to get the offensive lineman, Roger Rosengarten, who he actually dropped a little bit, or had some guys rise above him, if you prefer, from number 89 to 102.
Yeah, and you know, one of the longest players you're going to see, just got great length. He's almost 6'9". He's almost 6'8", and just long kid. He is, I think, was 270, I think, when Chris Fetters talked to him. Brandon Huffman talked to him at the All-American Bowl, and just really impressive as a player. As a kid, he and his parents have been up to the University of Washington several times during the season for unofficial visits. They loved Chris Peterson. They love Scott Huff. And talking to him, talking to his family, they're all really excited about what Washington can do with Jimmy Lake. They like the philosophy he's installing about being really super aggressive in everything they do, not just recruiting, not just on the field, but attacking the classroom, attacking the practices, and doing all that they need to do, attacking volunteer work, all the things that they need to do. The parents really bought into that from Jimmy Lake. So, you know, like you said, Kim, dropped a little bit, but not a terrible drop, 89 to 102. He's going to be a tackle at the University of Washington, most likely left tackle. And we'll see if he can push, since that left tackle spot is open because Trey Adams is gone now. That thing is going to be wide open, so it'll be interesting to see who ends up pushing for playing time there.
Savelle Small is probably the most heralded guy in the class, and Savelle dropped from, where is that? He was number 18 going into the final rankings. He dropped to 58, which is still pretty good ranking.
Oh, yeah, still good ranking, just not a five-star anymore. And we've been telling, hopefully nobody, this doesn't catch anybody by surprise, because I've been saying for the better part of 3 months that he was going to drop out of being a five-star. And I think you can't deny Savelle Small's athleticism. The guy is a freak of an athlete. It's almost 6'4", 235, 240 pounds, can run like a deer. Played all over the place in Kennedy's defensive line, played some nose tackle, played some end, played as a stand-up pass rusher. The problem with Savelle is he just needs so much work as far as his technique. He is very raw technique-wise, and he can have an impact, but he's not going to have an impact right away. And I think one of the reasons why you saw him drop a little bit is because I don't know if a lot of people think that he's going to maximize his potential, not because it's at the University of Washington and they're going to fail him. It's not because he's not a hard worker. I just think the perception of him is so high, it's going to be almost impossible for him to reach these lofty expectations that some people on Twitter have for him that are just absolutely ridiculous. He's going to be a situational pass rusher here, at least as a freshman and possibly even as a sophomore, as he learns more technique and how to use his hands a little bit better and not just be a speed guy. He's going to need to learn moves. He's going to need to learn the spin move and the swim and all these different things that are, you know, defensive ends and outside linebackers have to do. But as good as Joe Tryon looks, he's 6'5" with those long arms. Cybele Smalls could be just as good, if not better, than Joe Tryon. He just needs to put in the work. We'll see how it happens. That's why he dropped, though. But they still, that at 58, they still see him as a second-round draft choice overall. So it isn't like this guy is a failure on the field. They just think there's guys that are more ready to make an impact and possibly have a higher future.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Jalen McMillan, probably, you know, one of the top prizes in this recruiting class. And he's out of San Joaquin Memorial down in California, down in Fresno. And he just stayed where he was, number 38.
Yeah, just outside of the five stars. They only had 32 five stars, and he ended up at 38. So, oh, my gosh, this guy just blew me away. I didn't, you know, when you watch his film, you can see the speed, but you don't know how fast the guys are that he's playing against, right? Well, then he goes to the Adidas All-American game and first offensive play of the game, takes it 75 yards, takes a five-yard slant and takes it 75 yards to the house. And you know he's playing against fast and very talented kids when you're down at the the Adidas All-American game. So the guy is just all-out effort, all-out speed, athleticism. He can do it all. He had a few drops in that game. I think sometimes you see that kind of stuff. I don't see that him having that problem once he gets to the University of Washington. And I'm looking it up here. He had – In 4 years of playing, he was a part-time starter as a freshman and then a full starter as a sophomore, junior, senior. He had 260 receptions, 5,234 yards, and 54 touchdowns. That is a monstrous high school football career, and it's only going to get better once he gets to the University of Washington and gets some real – I don't want to say real coaching because I'm sure he has good coaching there, but – man, once he gets to the University of Washington, he should just take off and be one of the, I bet you anything. I will put money on it now. Not a lot of money because I don't have a lot of money, but I think he's only going to be a three-year player at the University of Washington.
With the final rankings coming out, when you look at the composite rankings, Oregon rated number one in the conference or Washington number two. If you're strictly looking at the 24/7 rankings, Washington is number one, Oregon is number two. And when you take a look at overall rankings in the country, Washington ranked 15th in the composite and 13th overall, Scott.
Yeah. Solid year for the University of Washington, especially when you consider that they didn't have a great season on the field, especially but a lot of these kids were committed before that. So it wasn't just about winning, but that always helps. And then you had the transition from Chris Peterson to Jimmy Lake. And you don't always see teams being able to, I'm sorry, Kim, hang on a second. I got a frog in my throat. You don't see a lot of kids, you don't see a lot of teams able to keep every commit that they have when you have a coaching transition. Now, Washington was able to keep those guys intact. They were able to sign 22 high school players and keep Jordan Lolohea, who returned from his mission after being a 2017 signee. So, you know, I'm sorry, 2018 signee. So I just think 2017 signing. Anyway, they were able to keep that intact. And the fact that they were able to finish number one in the 247 composite is pretty impressive. Oregon had three really good players that they ended up with in the 247, top 247, which I think all of them were high. No, other than Jalen McMillan, all of them were higher than their three were higher than the rest of Washington's. But Washington had nine in the top 247, and Oregon only had three, which actually surprised me when I saw that. I thought Oregon had more in the top 247. So, you know, Washington did really well. I think it's only going to get better with the additions of the coaching staff, but also Jimmy Lake loves recruiting, whereas I think Chris Peterson knew he needed to recruit, but it wasn't a passion of his.
big weekend this past weekend. They had a couple of people, a couple of kids that had already signed to play at Washington, a couple of commits, but had a bunch of walk-ons. And what they wind up with, three commitments from walk-ons over the weekend, Chris?
Four. Yeah, four. So they got Josiah Nicolau, the defensive tackle prospect out of Bellarmine Prep, which is in Tacoma. He committed on Sunday, and then yesterday they got three guys in Bradley McGannon, a defensive end prospect out of Yelm High School, and then two kids from Lake Stevens, defensive back Kaysen Kinchin and offensive lineman Logan Bruce.
Any of those guys jump out at you?
Boy, you know, Bradley McGannon, I think, really kind of stands out to me from the standpoint that he could be a really versatile guy and end up playing end or tackle. And Kaysen Kinchin, you know, I mean, Washington has had a lot of success bringing in defensive backs as walk-ons and being contributors at the very least on special teams. And I think this guy could end up being that. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he wound up earning a scholarship from the University of Washington. A lot of people have tried to compare him to Miles Bryant, and he might be a little like him, but Miles Bryant was much better at this point in his career. So I don't want to say he's going to have quite the impact that Miles Bryant did, who played for 4 years at the University of Washington and was a scholarship guy for three of those 4 years. But I think he could have a really solid career.
And another guy that they had in over the weekend, Nick Sani, who's a tight end out of
Modesto.
God, I love his size, 6'6", 245, and small-time offers for him, but Washington seems to like him a lot. Is he the only guy left on the board, Scott?
Well, yeah, you still have Jack Geary, who's left on the board, and there might be one or two other guys that obviously Tanoa Togiai is another one that the defensive lineman out of Rigby. So Jack Geary is a tight end. Nick Sani is a tight end, and then you have Tanoa Togiai, who is a defensive lineman. That's kind of your final three, and I think they just want to make sure that they get the guys that they want to get. Togiai is LDS and plans to take a mission after spending a year on campus, so keep an eye on that as well. Even if he does commit at Washington, he probably won't have much of an impact for at least 3 or 4 years because he's going to take his mission, and he probably won't do very much next year. So you know, that's kind of it right now. And then we're fully into 2021. We're already kind of there anyway, but we're fully into the 2021 cycle once February 5th wraps up.
Rumors out there that the quarterback from Stanford, who is in the transfer portal, and KJ Costello is visiting Washington today. We haven't done much with it because, honestly, I haven't been able to confirm it. So just a lot of rumors out there. I know Mike Vorel from The Times says he confirmed it, but we haven't been able to do it on our own. Thoughts on that, Scott?
Thoughts on it? I guess my concern is if you're going to lose a quarterback because you bring in a transfer, then is it really worth it? Because let's just say that you bring in KJ Costello and Jacob Sermon decides I don't need this. I've been in this system now for almost 3 years and they're bringing in a guy to replace me. And then Sam Heward's coming in the following year. So I'm not going to get really a chance to win this thing. So I'm going to go. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just throwing out for instance, well, do you take KJ Costello, who was, I know his numbers look pretty good, but he was average. Kim, did you see him as a special player?
Well,
you've watched him play?
I think there's some scouts out there who actually had him in the first round as a first round talent. And sometimes when you're taking a look at a quarterback and the system he's in, is that what he is? I mean, is that truly what he is? If you took a KJ Costello and put him in the Washington offense, how much different would it be? Because rumor is also he's leaving here to go down to Mississippi State and visit Mike Leach. How much different would he look, you know, playing for Mike Leach? So
yeah.
I think some of it has to do with the system and the coaching and, you know, what they're trying to do. But, you know, there's some NFL scouts out there who thought he was a first-round talent. So.
Well, Washington is supposedly going to more of a run-oriented offense, more of a pro-style attack. And I don't know. I don't see him being the difference maker that Washington needs at that position. I'd much rather them grow with either Dylan Morris or Jacob Sermon and have that depth for next year when Sam Heward comes in, because they're probably going to lose someone when Sam Heward comes in. So I don't know. ideal for me, but obviously you got to just trust that the coaches know what they're doing and they know what they need. So it's the weakest link on Washington's team right now. I think that's pretty easy to say.
Well, I think the biggest thing, Scott, and you know, we keep on going over and over, like Marshawn Lynch said, over and over and over and over and over and over. It is incredibly difficult to get a grad transfer into Washington. Incredibly difficult. And I know that there's some people in the athletic department who, you know, went to upper campus and tried to make it a little bit easier to bring in these grad transfers. And that was kind of met with, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, this is still an academic institution, and it's one of the top in the country, if not one of the top in the world. And if you're going to, you know, give a special admit to a football player, that means one more person isn't going to be able to get in. So the athletic
academics at UW isn't high on that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing people don't get is when you take a look at the budget for the athletic department and then you take a look at the budget for the overall school, athletic department's a drop in the bucket. It really is. It's nothing. It's real visible. But what is it? 5-10% of the budget?
Not even that, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just small. So at the end of the day, it's still an academic, you know, institution. And you let a football player in who doesn't, you know, deserve to be there, or you're bringing him in just so he can play football, how'd you like to be upper campus and have to deal with that?
Yeah, well, and also, and I don't think KJ Costello is going to have any academic issues from a not going to class standpoint, but don't kid yourself. The Quad A Green situation definitely soured the academic people on bringing in transfers to the University of Washington.
Yep.
It's going to make it harder to get transfers in, not easier.
Yeah, no, and it's also going to make the basketball and football. Well, the football program hasn't taken any guys that have been academic risks or borderline academic guys, but I think you're going to see that tighten up on basketball. I don't think you're going to see Coach Hopkins take guys in, because like Coach Pete said, it's not fair to bring in guys who can't hackle the academic rigors that you will be put under at University of Washington. Now, the football players haven't had a problem on that, and KJ Costello is definitely not one of those guys, but academics, like it or not, it's Washington. It's not Oregon.
Yeah, or ASU or Wazoo or any of these other schools. It's just not as easy as you guys want to make it out to be. It's just not. And the only way to make it easier is to get some special exceptions. And the academic side, like it or not, they are not going to do that. They're just not going to do it at the University of Washington.
Anything else to cover, Scott, before we wrap this up?
No. February 5th, that's signing day. I'll be on the boards. We'll have another board, and we're going to recap a lot of the guys that have signed. We're also going to be talking about a lot of 2021 guys here over the next, I'd say, a couple months as they really dig into things. And then we got spring ball, March 30th, man. Just crazy. It never ends, and it's just one thing that leads right into another.
Basketball game on Thursday against Arizona, Saturday night against Arizona State, and it never ends. So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells along with Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.